Codea? Kuat shook his head firmly. There's simply no way that Codea could be rendezvousing with them, not without notifying me first. Establish a comm-unit hookup with her, he ordered. Immediately. I'm afraid that's not possible, sir. We've already attempted raising Codea's cruiser on both the secured and unsecured transceiving bands, but she has apparently given orders to her crew not to respond. Sir? A few moments had passed in silence. Do you have orders for us? Deep inside Bot, his brooding thoughts had grown darker. Yes, he said slowly. I'll need to speak to the Alpha Foreman and Beta Supervisors out in the construction docks. It's time.
The three figures, Codea, the attaché Wan Uzog, and Commander Rojdens, sat around an improvised conference table aboard the Scavenger Squadron's mobile base unit. In the center sat a glossy rectangular object. Its contents had been extracted and run through the portable data scanners that Uzog had brought with him from Alliance headquarters.
Of course, it's obviously fabricated.
Uzog's airless skull was reflected in the black container sheen.
There's no question about that.
What the attaché is saying,
Commander Rojdens made a dismissive gesture at the items on the conference table,
is that the responsibility for that particular raid has been established beyond a shadow of a doubt. I don't see why we're even bothering with this.
You're missing the whole point.
Go, dear. She hadn't come all this way to wind up dealing with some one-track military mind.
All that's important is knowing who had an interest in creating this phony evidence and why they did it.
Uzog reached out and touched the commander's sleeve.
She's got an excellent point. Someone wanted the Rebel Alliance to believe that Prince Shizor and the Black Sun organization was involved in some way with a raid by Imperial stormtroopers on a moisture farm on the planet Tatooine. It's logical to assume that the target of that disinformation would have been the Rebel Alliance, and more specifically, Luke Skywalker himself. Skywalker has become both an inspiration and a charismatic leader for our forces. At this point, it might very well be said that his joining the Rebels was a crucial turning point for the Alliance at one of our darkest hours. But the moral strength that has flowed into the Alliance was largely shaped by a purity of vision as well. Skywalker knew that the raid in which his family died was the work of the Empire. He's known since exactly what he's had to fight against. What would the consequences have been, both for Skywalker and the Rebel Alliance, if that vision had been confused and muddied by evidence showing that Prince Shizor and Black Sun had somehow been involved in that stormtrooper raid? Skywalker's attention might well have been diverted at some crucial point, while he tried to unravel this mystery, the clues of which were all lies to begin with. He very likely would have found that out and seen through the lies, but at a price of critically lost time, and the Alliance would have paid that price with him.
The sneer had vanished from Rojdan's face.
I see your point.
It's exactly why I wanted the Alliance to have this information, said Goodyear. As security head for Kuat Drive Yard, I've discovered some things I'd rather not have found. My sympathies are with the Rebel Alliance, gentlemen, but apparently my feelings are not shared by everyone here. Most importantly, they're not shared by Kuat of Kuat, the leader of Kuat Driveyard. Of course, it's bad enough that he has not supported you in your struggle against the Empire, but it turns out that he's gone to actively seeking your defeat. She paused a moment, gauging the two men's reactions to her words. For it was Kuat of Kuat who created this false evidence, and who sought to have it planted where Luke Skywalker would have eventually learned of it and been deceived by it. Uzog frowned.
I'm not completely sure of your interpretation of Kuat's actions. I've dealt with Kuat of Kuat in the past, before you became head of security for Kuat Driveyard. At that time, I ordered him to throw the resources of his corporation behind the Alliance, and he refused. But I was convinced that he bore the Alliance no ill will, but was simply concerned with the corporation's fate should Emperor Palpatine defeat and destroy us. Such a decision on his part was prudent but regrettable. Of course, Kuat may have changed his position regarding the Rebel Alliance. We can expect that Palpatine has brought great pressure on him. Or...
The Alliance attaché nodded thoughtfully.
The scheme in which this fabricated evidence was to have played a part might not have been directed against the rebels at all. The target might have been Prince Shizor himself, while he was still alive. Sitting across from the attaché, Kodir tried to conceal her own reaction to Uzal's words.
He's even smarter than I expected, she thought. Maybe too smart.
We don't have time to sort out all the possibilities, Commander Rojden said. The question is, what are we going to do about it?
True, said Uzal. We have no way of foreseeing what the outcome of the events out near Endor will be. In the aftermath, the relative balance of forces between the Alliance and the Empire may be absolutely critical. And the ships here at Kuat Drive Yards would be valuable to both. Perhaps decisively so. We need to make sure that they don't fall into the hands of the Imperial Navy. And,
he glanced over at Kodir,
we also need to make sure that Kuat Drive Yards is on our side. Not just now, but in the future. But given the evidence we've seen...
One hand gestured toward the falsified data recording unit on the conference table.
We can't depend on Kuat of Kuat to see it that way.
You're talking about eliminating him, said Rojden.
Or at least removing him from his position of control over the corporation. In which case, we'll need someone else running Kuat Drive Yards.
Both men looked over at Kodir of Kubok. She kept her face a carefully composed, expressionless mask, hiding the thrill of triumph she felt at the moment.
At last,
thought Kodir. Everything I wanted, everything for which I've been scheming and plotting for so long. It was all hers now, handed to her by the Rebel Alliance. Very well. Kodir felt her hands squeeze into fists as though they were already grasping the very circuits of unlimited power. I accept the burden you have offered me. She couldn't stop a thin smile from playing about her lips. You are now looking at the new head of Kuat Drive Yard.
Kuat of Kuat turned back to his lab bench. A simple audio recording mechanism was plugged into the signal relay from the microprobe spy device that listened to those other voices far above construction docks. Those voices, Kodir's and the scavenger squadron commander's, and that of the negotiating attaché from the Rebel Alliance, had talked of the fate of Kuat Drive Yard.
Neela stood with her arms folded across her breast, watching the other woman as she stepped away from the door and into the center of the tiny room. The door had been locked from the moment that Neela had been shoved inside by a pair of KDY security operatives. She had expected as much even before she had tried opening it. You know, Kodir, we really should have had this little talk a long time ago. But always so little time. So I can imagine... Neela regarded her warily. You must be busy right about now. What with that stuff you managed to take off of Buffett and everything you could do with it, Neela let a thin smile show. I know things about you, Kodir. I know you like keeping secrets. Well, this is one that's gotten away from you.
Surprise flickered at the centers of Kodir's gaze.
What do you mean? You've been talking to somebody from the Rebel Alliance, haven't you? Somebody important who can get you what you want, what you've been after for a long time.
How do you know that?
Neela stepped to one side, in a slow, circling dance with Kodir, their gazes locked tight with each other. That part's easy, she said. I could see the Rebel ships up above the construction docks as we came in. Neela tilted her head for a moment toward the surrounding bulkheads. And you can't pass off something like this as the KDY headquarters. You see, I know what those headquarters are like. I've been there before. I remember them. Kodir's eyes widened. You remember?
Everything.
That changes A great deal. Kodia studied the figure standing before her. Depending upon what it is that you think you know. It's not a matter of thinking, replied Neela grimly. Next time you try something like this, you should hire better people to do your dirty work for you. Because if a memory wipe isn't done correctly and thoroughly, then there's a lot of little disconnected pieces left over, and bit by bit those memories can link up with each other. She gave a single, slow nod. And everything comes back. I had already remembered my real name, Katil of Kuvolt, before you ever showed up at the Hound's Tooth. But when I saw your face again, then all the rest came back. Neela's hand lowered and clenched into a trembling, white-knuckled fist. Everything, including my own sister, had tried to get rid of me.
I got rid of you?
A sneer curled one corner of Kodir's mouth. Because you were a fool. Because I wouldn't go along with the schemes you had worked up to overthrow Kuat of Kuat and take control of the corporation. Fool, I see. Kodir shook her head in disdain. I had to do something about you before you could let Kuat of Kuat know that I was plotting against him. I had to have you abducted from the planet Kuat and have your memory wiped so you'd no longer present a threat to me. Kodir's expression darkened into a venomous scowl. But when I found out that the ones I had trusted and paid to do my dirty work for me, as you call it, had failed me, I tracked you down before you could damage my plan. Kodir's smile was hardly less ugly than the scowl had been. You made your mistakes, and I've made mine, and we've both gotten what we wanted. You wanted the truth about the past, about what happened to you, and now you know. And I wanted the leadership of Kuat Drive Yard. Guess what? That's just what I'm given. So, you convinced the Rebel Alliance to get rid of Kuat so you can take over the corporation. Congratulations. For however long it lasts. That'll be for quite a while, said Kodir. It doesn't even matter which side wins the battle out near Endor. Now that I've got control of the corporation, I can deal with the Alliance or the Empire. It makes no difference to me. Kodir reached to the section of her belt that had been concealed by the flowing cape and pulled out a small but efficient-looking blaster pistol. She pointed it straight at Neela. There was a time when my foolish sentimentality made me think that I could spare your life. I've gotten over it, though. There's no way I can afford to let you remain alive and risk having you tell what you've remembered. Neela didn't bother to reply. Instead, she stepped forward toward the blaster. At the same time, she brought one forearm up and smashed it against Kodia's wrist. The blaster pistol went flying, its high arc broken by the nearest bulkhead. With her other hand, Neela grabbed the collar of Kodia's flowing cape. With a quick, sharp tug, she pulled her off balance. As Kodir fell forward, Neela brought her raised knee into the other woman's solar plexus, knocking the air from Kodir's lungs in a pain-filled gasp. Neela stood back and let Kodir fall, forearms clutched instinctively to her gut. Another blow to the back of the head laid her out flat on the room's floor. A few seconds later, Kodir managed to twist up onto her back. She blinked at finding the muzzle of the blaster pistol set right between her eyes. Face pale with shock and pain, Kodir gazed up at Neela in disbelief. You didn't used to be able to do stuff like that. I've been hanging out with a tough crowd. Before Kodir could manage a reply, a sound pulsed through the room, so deep and low that Neela could feel it through the soles of her boots. The noise sounded like distant thunder, but she knew it was something else. News from a distant world arrived almost simultaneously with the shockwave from the explosions. Commander Rojdenst had been personally monitoring the link to the Rebel Alliance communication ship near Sullust. Word came, at last, of a full-scale battle between Rebel and Imperial forces. The desire to be there in the thick of the action rose with tidal force through his heart. He heard the door to the officers' quarters open. Rojdenst looked up from where he sat at the comm unit controls and saw Ott Klemp, one of the younger pilots from his squadron. It started, said Rojdenst simply. He didn't have to explain to what he referred.
And we're stuck here in the middle of... His words were cut off by the first explosion, shivering through the frame of the mobile. A dull, low-frequency rumble made the air in the room suddenly tangible, and indicator lights burst red across the comm unit panel. The voice of one of the scavenger squadron's forward scouts crackled over the speaker.
Commander, something going on down at the KDY construction docks. Something big.
Rojdenst had already switched on the scanners for the base's viewport array. It's not the ships. He laid a broad fingertip on the closest display screen. The fleet isn't what's going up. The elongated shapes of the cruisers and destroyers could be seen through the smoke. Harshly lit flames and the hard-shadowed light of another series of explosions. It's the docks and all of the major shipbuilding equipment. As both he and Klemp watched, a Durasteel-drawed Magna hoist lurched forward like a dying saurian, its blind head bursting through a wall of fire, plowing into a rack of structural girders. The whole facility's been stuffed with high thermal explosives from the looks of it. Rojdenst reached for the comm unit mic. We've got to get those ships out of there. Both Dengar and Boba Fett in the houndstooth cockpit could see the fiery cataclysm taking place in the Kuat Drive Yard's construction docks. Fett pointed to the display screen. The docks are being blown up from within. There's only one person who could have arranged it, and that's Kuat of Kuat. Something must have happened, probably with the Rebel Alliance and that fabricated evidence his head of security took from us, that would end his control over the corporation. So he's taking the whole thing with him. Dengar folded his arms across his chest. This is the end of the road, then. You're not going to get any answers out of him now. Don't bet on it. Boba Fett reached for the navigational controls. I'm going in to find Kuat. You're crazy! Dengar, with sudden desperation, tried to reach past Boba Fett and grab the controls. We're supposed to be partners! His fist locked onto one of the main thruster engine throttles. And I say we don't get ourselves killed! With a quick swing of his forearm, Boba Fett knocked Dengar back against the cockpit's rear bulkhead. You're outvoted on this one, said Fett. The construction dock's roiling explosions approaching in sequence shook the Hound's frame, the metal of its hull grating against the rubble-strewn area on which it had crashed. Boba Fett started down the ladder to the cargo hold. I've got business to take care of. Dengar stared at him in amazement. He's going looking for Kuat. Realization caused Dengar to slowly shake his head. There's no stopping him. You go your way, Dengar shouted into the smoke filling the hold. And the explosions out of the construction docks grew louder, mounting on top of each other and blocking his words. And I'll go mine, he thought to himself. Dengar turned from the hatchway and dived toward the controls. The houndstooth accelerated, but the explosions that had been marching across the docks finally caught up with it, lifting the stern as though it were caught and thrown by a giant hand. Dengar hung on desperately as the ship spun end over end, directly toward the side of one of the towering cranes. The sequence of explosions was faster than the tumbling ship. Metal ripped apart from metal as the crane dissolved at last, its massive struts flaring outward and then spiraling into the vacuum. Through the flames and smoke filling what had been the explosion's center, the houndstooth spun into the clear. Dengar gaped at the cold, bright stars filling his vision. Made it! I made it! Pulling his hands from the control panel, he laughed in amazement. The words inside his head were wiped out by another blinding burst of light. In the distance, another larger ship, one of the fleet that the Rebel Alliance pilots had been trying to rescue from the construction docks, had not been as lucky as he had. The other ship's stern section had been engulfed by flames just as it had lifted away. The ship disintegrated, one fireball after another ripping the structural frame to pieces. A massive section of the other ship's hull, its jagged edges trailing white-hot streaks and quick sparks of debris, headed directly for the houndstooth. It hit, and Dengar was thrown through sparks that stung his face and arms like a swarm of angry insects into a darkness filled with the shrieks of alarm systems and the even louder clash of metal being ripped apart. For a moment, Dengar felt weightless. Then he realized, as his arms flailed behind himself, that he had been knocked through the cockpit hatchway
and was falling to the cargo hold below.
The impact brought him right to the point of losing consciousness.
He held on, dazed and unable to move. Listening, the houndstooth deflector shield collapsed, and the ship began to come apart around him. A realization struck him.
I must be already dead.
It couldn't have happened while he was still alive that a hand was reaching for him and taking his arm, pulling him up as Grove's own grave, and that there would be light and a face looking down at him. The one face he had wanted to see more than any other.
Dengar.
The vision spoke his name.
It's me. It's Manaru.
I know.
Drifting closer to unconsciousness, he smiled up at her.
I'm sorry, though. I'm sorry I'm dead.
You idiot! A real hand, not a hallucination, slapped him across the jaw, jolting him fully aware. I'll let you know when you're dead. And then he knew he wasn't.
Kuat of Kuat turned and regarded the figure that had entered the bridge of the moored star destroyer.
How did you know I'd be here?
Where else would you be? Boba Fett's battle armor was blackened with ash from the fires consuming the construction dock's wreckage. This is the biggest ship in the fleet. That makes for a suitably grandiose coffin.
Very astutely observed.
Kuat gave a judicious nod.
But I didn't think that even you would try to track me down here.
It's worth making the effort, replied Boba Fett. Now, questions that I want answers to.
He stepped closer across the floor, buckled with heat.
Why did you want me dead?
I knew you had in your possession certain items that could prove rather embarrassing to me, and fatal to Kuat Driveyard. If my scheme against Prince Izor had worked, I would have eliminated a major enemy, or at least given him something else to deal with, rather than conspiring to take over my corporation. But one thing happened that I was unable to foresee. Both Shizor and a vital element of my scheme were killed before the blow struck, which left a considerable mess to clean up. Getting rid of you would have just been part of that cleanup process.
I already figured out that much a long time ago. What I need to know now is whether that's the end of it.
Kuat nodded. All the conspiracies end here. There's no one else involved, no other forces to deal with, once these particular loose ends are taken care of. There won't be anyone else coming after you. Or, at least, not in regard to the evidence I fabricated against Prince Shizor.
But you knew that already, didn't you?
Kuat peered more closely at the bounty hunter.
So, there must have been some other question you needed to ask of me. What is it?
Boba Fett hesitated a moment before speaking.
There's a female named Neela that's been playing with me. She doesn't know I found out that she's actually Katil of Kuvolt. She's a member of one of the ruling families of the planet Kuat.
Very interesting.
Kuat had raised an eyebrow in surprise. She would also then be the sister of Kodir of Kuvolt, the head security for Kuat Driveyard.
And someone that Kodir had been extremely interested in locating. Whatever the reason, it was enough for Kodir to force her way into becoming security head, though she would have the resources to find this sister who had vanished.
Boba Fett darkled his gaze locked upon Kuat's eyes.
You've heard of a man named Fenald?
Of course. He was head of security for Kuat Driveyard before Kodir of Kuvolt was given the position.
So naturally,
continued Fett,
you would have given a sensitive, important job, like making the arrangements for the planting of fabricated evidence against Prince Shizor, to him.
True enough, Kuat nodded. That's exactly what I had him do. But how do you know about Fenald?
There was encoded material attached to that fabricated evidence. On my way back to my ship after retrieving the evidence from another bounty hunter named Bach, I managed to crack it. The encrypted material was Fenald's own identity code, including his connection to Kuat Driveyard. He probably put it in there so he'd have the ability to blackmail by threatening to reveal to Shizor, or Palpatine, or the Rebel Alliance, exactly where the fabricated evidence had come from and who had been responsible for it.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past him.
Here's the other question, said Boba Fett. Did you also order Fennol to make arrangements for Katil of Kuvalt to be abducted and memory wiped?
Of course not, said Kuat stiffly. What motivation could I have for wanting something like that done?
Then this Fennol could have been following someone else's orders when he contacted a go-between named Nil Persondon and made those arrangements.
Very likely.
Kuat smiled ruefully. I know from personal experience that loyalty was a negotiable item with him. He double-crossed me when members of some other ruling families conspired to take over Kuat Drive Yard.
Fennol's treachery might have been even more complicated than that. Apparently, he was double-crossing Kodir of Kuvolt at the same time.
Kuat's brow creased. What do you mean?
What better way for Kodir to have gotten your confidence and the security head position than to expose Fennol as a traitor to you? And the best way to do that would be to arrange for it with Fennol himself. Especially since Fennol had already been working for Kodir while he had still been your security head. In fact,
Boba Fett's voice drew taut as a durasteel wire.
Fennol was working for Kodir, following her orders, when he set up Kodir's sister Katil to be abducted and memory wiped.
How do you know that?
Simple, replied Boba Fett. When Kodir intercepted me with the KDY Security Division cruiser, she also found her sister Neela, or Katil, her real name, aboard the ship I had been using. Yet Deer deliberately concealed any reaction to seeing Neela there. In particular, Kodir showed no surprise at Neela not recognizing her in return. So Kodir knew that a memory wipe had been done on Neela. If Kodir hadn't found that out from you, then logically it must have been done on her instructions. It's easy enough to figure out what Fennol did. He had orders from you for one job to be taken care of on the sly, and he had orders from Kodir for another different job that had to be kept quiet. So he put more credits in his own pocket by using the go-between Nil Persondon to hire just one lowlife, Reed Upton, to take care of both jobs. Fennol must have gotten a good rate that way. The only problem was that when Dupton was accidentally killed, it left a mess for both you and Kodir Kuvalt to worry about, without either one of you knowing that the other was involved.
I'm impressed, Kuat regarded the bounty hunter thoughtfully. But that makes me wonder about something else. You've risked your life coming here to find out what someone, this female named Neela, desperately needs to know. That kind of tender-heartedness isn't exactly your style, Fett. Unless... Kuat managed a thin smile. Unless you've developed some other interest in her besides business.
Yes, again, said Boba Fett. I owe her a favor, and I always pay my debt.
Well, you're going to have a hard time letting her know what you found out.
Listen, Kuat raised a hand.
Outside the Star Destroyer, the rumbling, percussive sounds of the explosions advanced closer and closer.
There's no way out of here now.
Yes, there is.
Fett gestured with the blaster pistol.
Get away from the controls.
Don't be ridiculous. One man can't fly a ship this size. It takes a crew.
I said, get away from the controls. If you want to stay here in the docks, go ahead. But this ship is leaving.
Yes, you wish, said Kuat. Every man should pick his own way of dying, and I've already chosen mine.
He turned away and walked toward the bridge's hatchway. The explosions hadn't yet torn away the narrow connector to the pressurized equipment shed next to the Star Destroyer. Kuat sealed its hatch behind himself, then sat down on a crate marked with the emblem of Kuat Drive Yard. He felt tired and glad at the same time. Tired from his long work. Glad that it would soon be over.
How many did we get out?
Commander Rojden stood at the mobile base's largest viewports, gazing at the conflagration sweeping across the distant construction docks. Four of the Lancer-class frigates, sir. From the center of the room, Ott Klemp made his port. The rest that we extracted were Zebulon B frigates.
And how many men did we lose?
The commander glanced over his shoulder. Only two. I think, sir, you'd have to consider this a successful operation.
Perhaps, said Rojden.
But I only consider it worth losing good pilots if something worthwhile is accomplished. Until we hear what's happened out at Endor, we don't know whether there's even going to be an alliance that can make use of these ships.
Klemp looked toward the control panel. We're still under comm unit silence?
You got it, the commander nodded.
Right now there's no signals going in or coming out of that sector.
His words were interrupted by a sudden, brighter flare of light from the Kuat Drive Yard's facility. Both men turned toward the viewport. It's the Star Destroyer, said Klemp, pointing out the flame-engulfed shape. It's moving! Klemp and the commander watched as the Star Destroyer, larger than any of the rescued ships nearing the base, slowly began to rise from the dock in which it had been moored. The ship suddenly veered to one side, the flank of its hull crashing against the warped and broken towers of the cranes arching above it.
Whoever aboard that thing, they've lost control of it,
Rojden shook his head.
If he tries to pull out of there, he'll tear that ship to pieces.
Klemp peered closer at the image in the viewport. It looks like he's got another idea. The Star Destroyer's thruster engines had throttled back down. There was a moment of stillness at the end of the construction dock. Then the ship was lit suddenly brighter by the simultaneous flash of its arsenal of high-powered laser cannons going off. The bolts weren't aimed, but achieved an impressive amount of damage despite that, ripping through the weakened structure of the docks and the twisted metal of the crane. Once more, thruster engines lit up. This time, the awkward forward course of the ship sent the metal fragments scattering like straw. Rojden nodded in appreciation as he watched the Star Destroyer move away from the burning wreckage of that drive yard and into open space.
Too bad.
Sir?
Too bad that's not one of our guys.
A thin smile raised a corner of Neela's mouth. You're blasting your way out of the KDY construction docks. Did the Rebel Alliance more good than their own scavenger squadron was able to achieve? She and Boba Fett were standing in the bridge of the Star Destroyer that he had managed to extract from the docks inferno. The manned ship was silent and empty, except for them.
How do you figure that?
Simple, replied Neela. Kuat of Kuat had wired up enough sequentially linked explosives to blow up all of Kuat Drive Yard. But this Star Destroyer was one of the critical links in the chain. When he pulled the ship out of the docks, the chain was broken. Kuat didn't live long enough to see what happened. But the result is that over 80% of the KDY construction docks survived intact.
Fett shrugged. That's not my concern.
Perhaps not. Neela regarded the bounty hunter. But it might be my concern, if I want it to be.
Of course.
As always, Fett was way ahead of her.
Kuat Drive Yards is going to need a new leader. The other ruling families can see how things stack up now. If the Rebel Alliance indicates that it wants you running KDY, they'll undoubtedly fall into line.
I'm not sure I want it. Neela could see her reflection in the dark visor of Boba Fett's helmet. After all that's happened, I'm not exactly close to anyone on the planet Kuat. Kodir is the only direct blood relation I have, and she's already being shipped down to face a tribunal of elders from the ruling families. There's a lot of charges being made against her. Conspiracy, murder, kidnapping. Neela slowly shook her head. Maybe loyalty doesn't run thick in the Kobolt bloodline. I don't feel it, at least.
Suit yourself, said Fett. But I have other business to take care of.
All right, let's hear it.
I'll make you a trade.
Fett gestured toward the ship surrounding them.
Here's a new, completely operational Star Destroyer fresh out of the KDY construction docks. It's yours. You can signal the scavenger squadron commander to come out here and pick it up. That should make you even more popular with the Rebel Alliance.
Neela glanced around the ship's bridge, then looked again at Boba Fett.
So, what do you want in exchange?
Two things. First, the hound's tooth.
The hound's in pretty bad shape.
It'll get me where I need to go, said Fett. And second, your silence. Right now, it's more convenient for me if everyone goes on believing I'm dead.
As you told me, suit yourself.
Neela's gaze turned tighter and harder.
But this ship isn't up to buy that kind of silence. I want something a little more. Like some answers. I want to know why you really went down to have your little confrontation with Kuat of Kuat while the construction docks were blowing up all around you. I can't believe it was really out of any concern for me, and finding out the truth about whether there was some big conspiracy of which I was the target. A second passed, then Boba Fett nodded.
You're right, he said. None of that is of any consequence to me. All that matters is my life and my business. And that's what I was taking care of when I confronted Kuat of Kuat. Now that I'm certain that the conspiracy didn't extend any farther than him, I can go ahead and deliver the fabricated evidence to those who want it.
His words puzzled Neela. Who would want it now? Prince Shizor is dead.
As you say, Shizor is dead. But Black Sun is still a very powerful and dangerous organization. And since Shizor's death, the leadership of Black Sun has been a matter of some dispute. A power struggle between those who've been most loyal to Shizor and the usurpers who had been plotting against him even while he had still been alive. And the usurper faction has made it clear to me that I stand a good chance of dying in as painful a manner as possible if I don't hand over the fabricated evidence to them. Anybody else I'd have a chance against, but not Black Sun. Killing is one of its specialties.
I'm impressed, said Neela. I didn't think you were afraid of anything.
This isn't fear, it's reality.
So, this is part of the deal as well.
Neela pulled her shoulder bag in front of herself and extracted the flat black parcel inside.
She held the fabricated evidence in both hands.
Boba Fett took the parcel with no word of thanks. She hadn't expected any.
Wait a minute.
Neela spoke up as Fett turned away.
You realize,
she said quietly,
that you're being a complete fool about this, don't you?
She pointed to the parcel in Boba Fett's gloved hands.
You're going to be carrying that stuff into a pretty dangerous place.
Sure, this Black Sun usurper faction is going to be happy to get it, but that doesn't mean they're going to keep their end of the deal. They're more likely to take the fabricated evidence from you, say, thanks very much, and then drill a blaster bolt through your skull. I've already thought about that, replied Fett. And I've got a few tricks up my sleeve in case they try anything. Fett turned and walked toward the hatchway. He stopped and looked back at her. When you came here, did you stop to think what your chances would have been if I decided to tie up a few loose ends by eliminating you?
Sure.
Neela reached into the shoulder bag and pulled out a blaster pistol. She held it with both hands, aimed straight toward Fett.
That's why I came prepared.
Fett gazed at her and the weapon for a moment, then slowly nodded. Good. He said. I'm glad you learned a few things from me.
Oh, I learned lots.
She lowered the weapon only as she could hear the echo of his footsteps fading away in the corridor beyond the hatchway. A few moments later, Neela glanced toward the bridge's main viewport. What was visible there was the fiery trace of the hound's tooth, battered but still capable of traveling toward its hidden destination. But when Neela closed her eyes, what she saw were the heat-shimmering expanses of the dune sea on Tatooine, and a nearly dead figure, skin and battle armor eroded, face down in the sand. She still couldn't decide whether it might have been better if she had just left him lying there. Dengar and Minaru sat in the cockpit of Dengar's ship, the Punishing One.
You came all that way and found me.
It took some doing, said his betrothed. You weren't easy to track down.
She couldn't have cut it any finer, either. The punishing one had shown up near the KDY construction docks just as Bost's former ship Houndstooth had been hit by the ragged chunk of metal that had come whirling toward it. Without a second thought, she had hit the punishing one's thruster controls to maximum, swooping into the debris and managing to grapple and lock on to the other ship's cargo hold before it had lost its remaining atmospheric pressure. They had both been aboard the punishing one when he had slapped him back to full consciousness. The relief at finding himself alive and in the arms of the woman he loved ebbed a little inside Dengar. "I'm sorry," he said to her. "I failed you. Even with everything I did all that time being partners with Boba Fett, we still can't pay off that debt load I'm carrying." He laid his head against Minaru's shoulder. "We're no closer to the life we want than we were before." She laughed. "None of that matters as long as you're alive." "That's sweet of you to say." "No, really. I mean it." Minaru's expression turned earnest. "You don't realize what you've done just by remaining alive. You've won. We've won. Before I came to find you, I went to the gambler Dromus Madai. He agreed to cover the wager I proposed. A wager on your survival." Her smile brightened her face. "Believe me, I got great odds on you. Nobody expected you to be able to live through being partners with Boba Fett, but you did. The credits have been transferred into our holding account. It's more than enough to pay off your debt load." She leaned forward and kissed him, long and happily, then looked into his eyes. "It's our new life together. It's come, at last." "Yes," Dengar nodded slowly. "You're right." An unbidden chill touched his heart as a shadow fell across the joy he knew he should feel. "But there's still the Empire to worry about. How can anyone in the galaxy be happy with that looming over us?" Minaru kissed him on the brow this time. "Just a few minutes ago, I intercepted a comm unit transmission from the Rebel Alliance headquarters out at Sullis. The battle's over." Her voice dropped almost to a whisper. "At the Rebels won. It's the Empire that was crushed to a billion pieces." She wrapped her arms around him and laid her head on his chest. "Everything will be different now." He could hardly believe it, yet he knew it was true. "Everything," thought Dengar. "All their plans and hopes, those could come true now. And he wouldn't be a bounty hunter anymore." In the midst of his happiness, there was a thread of regret. It seemed a shame, after having survived and even profited from a partnership with Buffett, how many creatures could say the same, for him to turn his back on all that. Plus, there had been a certain excitement to all that had happened, from the moment when he had first stumbled upon an almost lifeless Boba Fett lying on the hot sands of Tatooine's doomed sea. "Maybe," thought Dengar, "I could still keep my hand in, just a little." He'd have to think about that some more. But for the moment, Dengar wrapped his arms around his betrothed. He turned his face away from hers and looked out the cockpit's viewport, at all the stars cascading in stately progression to the galaxy's edge. He closed his eyes and held his betrothed closer to himself. This is Anthony Heal. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars: The Bounty Hunter Wars, Volume 3, Hard Merchandise, by K.W. Jeter. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Lars Howell. Abridgment by Sharon Matlin. Hard Merchandise is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 1999, all rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warren Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production, copyright 1999, Lucasfilm Limited. The book Hard Merchandise is available wherever Bantam books are sold.